Hi, you're listening to Screen of the Crime. I'm Maggie, and this is a podcast where we talk about true crime and what would happen if your favorite TV or movie characters committed those crimes. As you can tell, Tess is not with us today. She is practicing social distancing during this quarantine time. As you all know, that the coronavirus has really shaken up all our lives a lot in the past 2 weeks. I know that a lot of us probably don't want to talk about it all too much and that it's very stressful right now, but I was just laid off from my job, and I would be very, very grateful to all of our listeners who maybe currently have jobs if they would support our podcast so that we can keep going during this time, especially that I can no longer work because I worked in dining services and my campus is shut down. That being said, I hope everyone is staying healthy, everyone's practicing social distancing, everyone's staying inside if they can, and everyone's not hoarding bunches of toilet paper. This episode's going to be a little bit different because Tess is not with me today, and I'm sorry about the last 2 weeks of having no podcast episodes coming out. We had spring break and then an extended spring break. And we're all just dealing with a lot of stress because of the coronavirus outbreak. That being said, this is not like a sponsored episode or anything, but I subscribe to a morning email news site called Morning Brew, and they have been very grateful. They are now posting at the end of their news emails different things to do while you're self-quarantining. So it's like things to watch on TV and stuff like that. At the end of this episode, I will also be listing off different books, audiobooks, and TV shows that I've been watching or that you should watch or could watch during the quarantine time. Hope everyone has decided to listen to this podcast while they're quarantining themselves in their house. So this episode's different. I do not have a crime for you this episode, sadly, but I will be reading Reddit No Sleep Stories. I have not read them, so you're going to get my reaction as I read them. I know it's going to be a little awkward because there's no second person here, Tess, to react to when I say funny or scary things, but I hope I am enough right now for all of y'all. So, the first story is called A Story to Scare My Son. Son, we need to have a chat about internet safety. I slowly crumbled down onto the floor next to him. His laptop was open and he was playing Minecraft on a public server. His eyes were locked into the action. Comments scrolled down the side of the screen in a chat box. Son, can you stop your game for a minute? We've all been there, you know. He exited the world, closed the laptop, and looked at me. Dad, is this going to be another cheesy, scary story? What? I fake hurt feelings for a second, then grinned at him. I thought you liked my cautionary tales. He grew up listening to my stories about children who encountered witches, ghosts, werewolves, and trolls. Like many generations of parents, I use scary stories to reinforce morals and teach lessons about safety. Single dads like me should use all the parenting tools at their disposal. He scrunched his face a little. They were fine when I was six, but now that I'm older, they don't scare me anymore. They seem kind of silly. If you're going to tell a story about the internet, can you make it really, really scary? I squinted at him, incredulously. He folded his arms. Dad, I'm 10. I can handle it. Okay, I'll try. I began. Once upon a time, there was a boy named Colby. His expression indicated that he wasn't impressed with the terror of the introduction. He sighed deeply and settled in for one of Dad's cheesiest stories. I continued. Colby went online and joined several children's websites. Me too. After a while, he started talking to other kids in games, and on message boards. He made friends with another 10-year-old boy named Helper23. They liked the same video games and shows. They laughed at each other's jokes. They explored new games together. After several months of friendship, Colby gave Helper23 six diamonds in a game they were playing. Wow. This was a very generous gift. Colby's birthday was coming up, and Helper23 wanted to send him a cool present in real life. Colby figured it wouldn't hurt to give Helper23 his home address, as long as he promised not to tell it to any strangers or grown-ups. Helper23 swore he wouldn't tell anyone else, not even his own parents, and set about mailing the package. I paused the story and asked my son, "Do you think that was a good idea?" "No," he said, shaking his head vigorously. In spite of himself, he was getting into the story. This is just like a Princess Bride. Well, neither did Colby. Colby felt guilty about giving away his home address, and his guilt began to grow and grow. And by the time he put on his pajamas the next night, his guilt and fear were larger than anything else in his life. He resolved to admit the truth to his parents. The punishment would be steep, and it was worth it to have a clear conscience. He squirmed in his bed as he waited for his parents to tuck him in. The son knew the scary part was coming up. In spite of his tough talk, he leaned forward, wide-eyed. I spoke quietly and deliberately. He heard all the noises of the house, the washing machine bouncing around in the laundry room, branches scraping against the brick outside the room. His baby brother cooed in the nursery, and there were some other noises he couldn't quite pinpoint. Finally, his dad's footsteps echoed down the hall. "Hey, Dad," he called out nervously. "I have something to tell you." His dad stuck his head in the doorway at a weird angle. I've heard this story before. Sorry. In the darkness, his mouth didn't seem to move, and his eyes were all wrong. "Yes, son?" The voice was far off, too. "Are you okay, Dad?" the boy asked. "Uh-huh," sung the father in a strange, affected voice. Kobe pulled his covers up defensively. Is Mom around?" "Here I am." Mom's head popped into the doorway, below Dad's. Her voice was unnaturally falsetto. "Were you about to tell us that you gave your home address to Helper 23? You shouldn't have done that. We told you never to give out personal information on the internet." This sounds like a weird PSA. She continued. "He wasn't really a kid. He just pretended to be one. Do you know what he did? He came to our house, broke in, and murdered both of us, just so he could spend some time with you." A fat man in a wet jacket emerged in the child's doorway holding the two severed heads. Colby shrieked and gasped as the man dropped the heads on the ground, unsheathed his knife, and moved into the room to work on the boy. The son screamed too. He twisted his hands defensively over his face. But we were just getting started with the story. After several hours, the boy was almost dead, and his screams had become whimpers. The killer noticed the wailing of a baby in another room and removed his knife from Colby. This was a special treat. He had never murdered a baby before. God. And was excited about the prospect. Helper 23 left Colby to die and followed the cries through the house, like a homing beacon. In the nursery, he walked to the crib, picked the baby up, and held it in his arms. He moved towards the changing table to get a better look. But as he held the baby, the crying died down. The baby looked up and smiled. Helper 23 had never held a baby, but he gently bounced it in his arms like a pro. He wiped his bloody hands on the blanket so that he could stroke the baby's cheek. "Hey there, sweet little guy." The beautiful rage of sadism melted into something warmer and softer. He walked out of the nursery, took the baby home and named it William, and raised him as his very own. After I finished the story, my son was visibly shaken. Between rage staccato breaths, he stammered, "But Dad, my name is William." "Mm-hmm." I gave him a classic dad wink and tousled his hair. "Of course it is, son." William ran up the stairs to his bedroom in a fury of sobs, but deep down, I think he liked the story. So, there's that. We got some more. Okay. Sorry. This one is very long, but it's gonna be fine. This is called, moving around. I'm also drinking coffee and I'm sitting in my very dirty bedroom, so I just picture this. All right. This is called Room 733. The suicide room, that's what they call Room 733, as if it didn't have enough to worry about on my first day as a freshman. We had assigned a dorm room 734, which, it turns out, wasn't one of the nice add-on rooms in the South Hall. No, we found ourselves in the older wing of the building on the 7th floor. I wasn't too bummed out, though. At least they'd honored my request to a room with my best friend. Lydia and I spent most of the morning moving ourselves in. By the time our resident advisor, that's an RA for us cool kids who go to college, came by, I was taping up posters, and Lydia was reading. "Hi, girls. I'm Beth," chirped the bubbly blonde girl as she bounced into our room. "I'll be your RA this year." "Hi," I nodded at her. "Wow, you girls really work fast," she said, taking in our made beds and hung up clothes. Beth picked up a drawing of Cthulhu that Lydia had done over the summer. She turned it sideways, studying it. Is this the Kraken from Pirates of the Caribbean? Wow, she really knows what all those pop culture terms. Lydia glared at her over the top of her book. So anyway, the RA continued, I know our hall isn't as new as the South Hall, but trust me, there's a lot of history here. This building is almost 60 years old. Yes, I can see that, I said, looking around. The rooms are pretty small. Well, people were smaller in the 50s, Beth shrugged. Really, said Lydia flatly. Yep, really. Beth pursed her lips and just continued to stand there, while the room filled with awkward silence. So, I said, the corner room next to us, 733, is it? It looks a lot bigger than our room. Is anyone assigned to that room, or could we maybe... Oh, you don't want that room, Beth interrupted. There were a couple suicides in there. Who just mentions that? A hanging, a jumper, if I remember right. They're not assigning anyone to that room. Anyway, I'd just like to remind you that this is an all-girls floor, and guys are not allowed up here after 11. Before we could reply to her, Beth clapped her hands with a quick, well, nice to meet you, and she skipped out of the room. Lydia dropped her book on the bed and stared at the wall. I hate her. Did you hear the bomb she fucking dropped? I'm gonna call her dumb shit Beth. Lydia, seriously, suicides? Oh, Becca, relax. Every college campus has a few suicides. This is dark. Yeah, but in the same room? Lydia sighed. Really? Who cares? It's not our room. Yeah, I guess. I turned to study the little window in our room. Can you imagine climbing out that tiny window and jumping? Would you be alive? You'd be alive for at least 5 seconds before you hit the ground. Oh, fuck, Becca. Can you not? Lydia glanced at the window, a visible shudder. You know I fucking hate heights, and just talking about that shit is raising my blood pressure. We could always move into the suicide room, I teased her. That one has a window on each wall. Fuck you. Okay, but seriously, think about it. It would take a lot of commitment to squeeze out of that tiny window. Yeah, well, remember people who were apparently smaller back then? Lydia mumbled as she pushed her bed further away from the window. Since Lydia was an outgoing and friendly person, she made friends at lightning speed. There was a lot of parties in those first few weeks, at one of which Lydia inevitably met a guy. I'd known the girl since we were in diapers, so I fully anticipate her having a boyfriend by the end of September. His name was Mike, and he wasn't anything special, just your standard frat pledge douche canoe. Yeah. After about a month on campus, the novelty of college started wearing off. Lydia and I found our stride, and we spent more than weekends studying. Sorry. We spent more weekends studying than drinking. Midterms were coming up in a couple weeks, and I was determined to maintain a 4.0 GPA throughout my freshman year. We all hoped that, didn't we? One night in early October, I was woken by a loud grinding noise. I sat up in bed and strained to hear it. Lydia was also wide awake and listening. Slam! What the fuck? She mouthed to me. It wasn't unusual for there to be noise in the hallway, since other people came in at all hours of the night, but this sound had definitely come from next door, the corner room. Grind. Is that? Yeah, Lydia whispered. That's the window next door. At Lydia's insistence, we kept our window closed at all times. However, there was no mistake the sound of the window in room 733 being opened and closed again at regular intervals. Slam! Who's in there? Lydia shrugged. Is someone fucking with us? Is this like initiation? Lydia raised her eyebrow at me. Initiation to what? I don't know. College, maybe? They're hazing the freshmen. Grind. It opened. Who's hazing freshmen? I shrugged. Slam. It shut. Becca, I love you, but that was fucking stupid. I threw a pillow at her. Well, whoever it is, it's going to tell them to knock the fuck off. Me? I'm not risking being thrown out a window. Grind. Well, I'm not doing it. I'm an art major. You're a political science major. You go lay down the law. Fuck that. Of course she's an art major. Then call dumb shit Beth. Isn't this the kind of nonsense she should deal with? Slam. I'm not calling her. Don't you put that evil on me. Fine, Lydia whispered loudly. Then we'll just have to ignore it. I have class at 7:30, I whispered. Grind. Then do something. Ugh. I got out of bed and stomped to the door, threw it open dramatically, and went down the hall to pound on the door to room 733, which simply said, supply room. People are trying to sleep. Please fucking stop, I said. When there was no answer, slam. Dude, seriously, I sighed. I stepped back from the door and immediately noticed... problem. Room 733 was padlocked shut from the outside. I hurried back to my room. What happened, Lydia asked. I'm not going anywhere near that fucking room again. It's locked from the outside. I don't know how anyone could get in. So you're saying it's a spooky ghost? She laughed. No, I'm saying there is creepy shit going on inside a room... colloquially called the suicide room. Lydia scoffed and ran over to go back to sleep. I rolled over to go back to sleep. You should have been a drama major. We didn't hear the window next door again that night, but the next morning you could clearly see from outside that both windows in the corner room were now wide open. I watched the windows on room 733 for an entire week, but they remained open. Occasionally at night, I thought I could hear a noise next door like marbles dropping and rolling across the floor. Since it never woke Lydia up, I didn't bother say anything. One afternoon, I was alone in the dorm, editing notes on my laptop. I had my headphones in, but the music wasn't loud enough to cover the noise of someone knocking on the door. Come in, I said without looking up from the screen. The moment went by, and then I heard the knock again. I jerked my earbud out and slammed my laptop close. I turned around. Come? What the fuck? The door to the hallway was wide open. I'd left it open on purpose since Ian, a junior I was dating, was supposed to be stopping by. I heard the knocking again from behind me, literally jumped out of my chair. It had come from the other side of the room, the closet door. It was a closet that was shared both walls with room 733. Lydia, you're not fucking funny. Nothing. Lydia, I swear to God I'll punch you in your face. Silence. I walked over to the closet door and grasped the handle. Lydia, you're a fucking... Fucking what? Her voice came from the doorway behind me. I let go of the doorknob and stumbled back, wide-eyed. Lydia threw her stuff on the bed and turned to me, crossing her arms. I'm a fucking what? I thought you were hiding in the closet, I said lamely. What? Why? Because someone was knocking on the door. Jesus, Becca. I didn't think it's funny. Her name's Becca. Lydia rubbed her forehead and walked over to the closet, throwing open the door. There was nothing there but clothes and boxes. She made a swipe of her arms as if to say, what now? I swear, Becca, there is no one here. I know what I heard. We glared at each other until our little standoff was interrupted by a timely arrival of Ian. He immediately sensed the tension in the room. Hi, ladies, what's new? I gave my roommate a hostile look. There's strange shit going on in that room next door, but that's not new. Which room, 735, or the empty one? The empty one, Lydia emphasized. 733, yeah, I'm not surprised. That's a suicide room. Oh, just everyone knows it as a suicide room. Right, we heard about the deaths. We sat down on my bed. Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. Three suicides all in one dorm room. Three, Lydia raised her eyebrows. We were only told there were two. Well, there were a couple people in the 70s, and some guy about 10 years ago, he jumped out the window. Lydia and I both shuddered, although she was much worse. We were both terrified of heights. A falling death was about the worst thing I could think of. I will admit that three suicides in the same dorm room is fucking disturbing, Lydia said in an apologetic tone. Yeah, I heard there's something in that room, Ian said. Like what? No one knows. But every year, someone has a new theory, usually right around Halloween. Something gets published in a campus paper. Whatever it is there, though, it ain't friendly. So, has anyone ever killed themselves in the neighboring rooms like this one? Nah, just 733, honestly. I was surprised when I heard they were opening the North Hall this year. They told us that we were the biggest... They told us we were the biggest incoming freshman class in 20 years, I said absently. Absent-mindedly. Yeah, I heard that too. You know, you could request a room change, Ian sat down on the bed next to me. I leaned against his shoulder. Yeah, but they wouldn't keep us together, Lydia cut in. Becca and I have been best friends for 15 years. We can't room with other people. So, should we just keep living here next to Satan? I glanced at the closet door again. Lydia shrugged. At least we'll have the same stories to tell after graduation. These aren't the kind of stories I want to tell. A few days later, Lydia began to believe my closet story. I woke up in the middle of the night to the sound of someone whispering. I looked over at Lydia, who was already staring at me with wide eyes. She slowly brought a finger to her lips. I listened intensely, trying to hear what the voice was saying, when it was coming from, where it was coming from, but I couldn't understand even one word. I got out of my bed and tiptoed over to Lydia's. The whispering was definitely loud over there. But then she shared a wall with room 733. I listened harder. Never taken. Mouth of fools. What the hell? Lydia leaned over, put her ear up to the wall. I whispered. The whispering suddenly stopped. I leaned closer. Suddenly, there was a loud bang on the other side. Lydia immediately recoiled and clutched her ear in pain. Someone was in there. Suddenly, more angry than scared. More angry than scared, I again threw open our door and stomped over to the supposedly empty supply room. I banged on the door loudly, not caring who else I woke up at this point. Are you fucking kidding me? I yelled at the door. This shit ain't fun. This shit isn't funny anymore. Come out of that fucking room, you asshole. Silence. Then the doorknob started to turn. I didn't know what to expect to happen, but it wasn't that. I backed up so far from the door that I ran into the opposite wall. When the handle had turned all the way down, something started to push from the other side. The door groaned loudly, but the locks held. I held my breath until the pressure of the door subsided and the handle slowly returned to its normal position. I noticed Lydia peeking her head out from our room. She held up her hands as if to say, "What happened?" "Someone thinks they're funny," I answered her out loud. She shook her head and disappeared back into our room. I think at this point, you know, you'd think, that's not a person in there. How would they get in there, you know? Whatever. Like, that's definitely a demon, you know? Whatever. Whatever. I knelt down on the floor and brought my head down to the carpet, peering under the door crack. It was the first time I had seen into the corner room. Room 733 was definitely a supply closet. There were chairs stacked along one wall and bed frames along the other. A few rotting mattresses were piled under one of the windows, and a thick layer of dust covered everything in the room. How can you see that from under a door? Whatever. The windows were absolutely huge, which is something you wouldn't really tell by looking up at the building. They were open as always. I could definitely see how someone could easily climb through them to the outside ledge. The room didn't look like it had been disturbed in a couple of decades, which sent a shudder racking through my body. The moonlight, which had been providing enough light to see into the room, suddenly vanished, and I saw only pitch black inside. I blinked rapidly, trying to adjust my night vision. I squeezed my eyes shut, and when I opened them, a large yellow eye was looking back at me, only a few inches away from my face on the other side of the door. I screamed, and I woke up half the dorm. There was no denying that things were escalating. The next morning, Lydia and I put in dorm change requests with resident services and hoped for the best. In the meantime, we agreed never to be alone in our dorm room at night. Either we both spent the night at home or neither of us did. We started spending most nights with our respective boyfriends. I told Ian everything that had happened, and he suggested I maybe talk to Campus Paranormal Society. I'm sorry, what? There's a what? There's a paranormal society on campus? Okay. Okay. I hesitantly made an appointment, and Lydia and I met with a small, cleanly dressed kid named Craig and four of his colleagues the following Tuesday. We told them everything we could remember, every incident, no matter how small. Craig and the four other members of the Paranormal Society sat quietly and took notes for half an hour. It wasn't until we finished that anyone spoke. "Is that all?" Craig asked. "Yes," I said slowly. "Would you mind waiting out in the hall for a few minutes so that I may confer with my colleagues?" "Sure," Lydia smiled and stood up. "Whatever you need." The door had barely shut behind us when Lydia snorted and rolled her eyes. "Let's go." "Go where?" I asked. "Are you serious?" "Lydia, come on. We need help. I'm freaked out. I'm freaking out." "We haven't stayed one night in our dorm room since Thursday, so this isn't something we can just brush off." "Okay." She drew her hands up. "Let's hear what they have to say, and then we can go over to resident services and check on our move request." We loitered in the hallway for another 15 minutes before Craig came out and asked us to come back and take a seat. With all the pomp and circumstance of a meeting of Parliament, Craig cleared his throat and made his diagnosis. "What we're dealing with, ladies, is a very angry ghost." Wow. Someone saw one episode of Supernatural. "Is that your professional opinion, Craig?" Lydia said, and I shot her a look. "Yes," he stuttered. "A vengeful spirit." "A spirit," I asked. "I very much doubted that there..." I very much doubted that that's what we were dealing with." "Yes," answered one of the not Craigs. That's ghost to the lay person." "Jesus Christ," Lydia groaned and rubbed her temple. Mistaking Lydia's frustration with despair, Craig rushed right into his speech. "Don't be afraid, ladies. We're going to take care of you. It's true that spirits can be quite a headache if you don't know how to exorcise them, which is why it's good you came to us. Suicides almost always result in angry ghosts. They need revenge." "Revenge on whom?" I asked. "On other students. Perhaps this particular spirit was bullied into taking his own life and now seeks to torment others." "Ah, listen. We can take care of this for you right away. All we ask is a small donation to the society, Craig continued. We honestly don't realize that room was having this much activity. It's really very exciting. Great. Well, thank you for your time, Lydia said as she grabbed my hand and pulled me out of the chair. Do you want us to set something up for this weekend? Craig asked. Tell you what, we'll call you. Lydia hurried me out of the room wearing a weary look, and we didn't speak again until we were almost in the admin building. That was a waste of time, she said. Look, I'm not disagreeing with you, but Becca, tell me you didn't honestly buy into that. So you don't think it's I was having trouble even saying the word. It sounded so ridiculous. Ghost? Ghost. Well, I don't fucking know, but neither do they. That guy has no idea what the fuck he was talking about. I pulled my hood lower over my ears as we stepped in the line at the resident service desk. Let me put it this way, Lydia continued. They're playing Ghostbusters, and we're living the fucking Exorcist. Fine. I sighed. Then what do you want to do? Just keep sleeping at Mike and Ian's until we get reassigned? I just want this to end, Lydia crossed her arms and stared straight ahead. We all want this to end. Even if living next to that fucking room wasn't scary, it was sure as hell distracting. All right, well, I mean, we're probably safe during daylight hours, so as long as we don't spend nights there, we should be okay. Our room is only ghost-adjacent after all, and our new assignment will come through, so... come through soon. I checked my watch. Fuck, it's almost 2. Shit, really? I gotta go. Mike got accepted to Sigma Chi! Sorry, that's where my brother was. That's my brother's frat. And he gets initiated today. Oh yeah, I forgot. He rushed. And the girl at the desk waved at us. I hadn't even realized we reached the front of the line. Let me know what they say, Lydia said as she ran out the door. The girl at the desk eyed me suspiciously as approached. Hi, you're the girl trying to move out of 734 in Riley, aren't you? Caught me off guard. Yeah, one of them. How'd you know? Sorry, I overheard you. Also saw your file come across my desk a few days ago, and I gotta ask. Why are you looking to transfer rooms, exactly? I was tired. I was beaten down. I didn't have the energy to think of a lie. Because shit is going on in the empty room next door, and it's really freaking us out. Noises, whispers... knocking. The other night, I saw someone. You saw someone? Yeah, in room 733. Yeah, I looked under the door. That was definitely someone in there. The girl narrowed her eyes at me for a moment, then nodded for no particular reason. Well, your rooms aren't ready yet, but I've pushed them through as a priority. For right now, you're stuck, though. There just isn't anywhere else to put you. I sighed. I figured as much. I'm Al, she continued, and look. I've actually done a lot of research on the Riley suicides, and I think I can help you. Or at the very least, offer some insight. Really? I asked hesitantly. Absolutely. I'm in Taylor Hall, room 310. I'll be back to my dorm by 4 today. Thanks, we just came from the Paranormal Society on campus. Ugh, say no more. Alice rolled her eyes. Yeah, so I definitely see you at 4? Great, Alice said and smiled. This is very long. I was early to Taylor, but then so was she. I told her our story for the second time that day, and Alice wasn't afraid to interrupt with questions, though her queries didn't betray her thoughts. When I was finished, she leaned back in her chair and sighed deeply. I can't believe it, she shook her head. I'd always heard rumors, but I honestly doubted any of that was true. I can assure you, everything I've told you is absolutely true. And how is it now, when you're there? We aren't ever there at night, but during the days, we've heard scratching on the walls, really quiet, whispering, and sometimes we still hear the windows opening and closing in broad fucking daylight. However, every time I look up from the street window to 733 are open. Sorry, street, the windows from 733 are open. Alice nodded. Well, for the record, I don't think you're in any danger. As much as it sucks, you guys are simply a casualty. Casualty. Yeah, I said that right. You just need to stay out of room 733. I snorted. Are you kidding? I would never go in there. I believe you. I believe that you believe that. But this thing, whatever it is, it's tricky, manipulative, a liar, and it's smarter than you. Same could be said about my cat. I'll try not to be offended by that. You shouldn't be. What do you think it is? Something very old and very evil. I regarded her skeptically and then let my eyes wander around the room. I hadn't really noticed the decor before, but to say Alice had an interest in the occult was an understatement. I can't see any situation where I could be compelled to enter that room. I know, but you have to be prepared that there may come a time when you have to make a decision about entering that room because what you're dealing with, it's already killed 5 people. 5? I thought there was 3. Yeah, well, Not everyone is inclined to do the level of research I do. Let's see. There's Ellen Burningham in 1961. She jumped out the window. She was the very first. And then Tad Collingsworth in 1968. He jumped, too. Marissa Krig in 1975. She hung herself. Erin Murphy in 1979. She jumped. And then Eric Dustin in 1992. He hung himself. Five suicides? How could the university still let people live there? They don't, apparently. That's why it's a supply room. And back then? Well, every few years, once everyone who would remember had graduated, the room would be reassigned. That was before the internet, you know, and the incoming freshmen were clueless. But after that last one, Eric Dustin, they closed the entire north hall of the seventh floor and built more rooms into the south hall. So, what does it want? Alice shrugged. Chaos? Death? Souls? Who knows? No one even knows what it is. Okay, so what do we know? We know that it's somehow bound to that room, though it seems to have minimal influence just outside of it. We know that everyone who has ever died was alone at the time. Whoever died was alone at the time, and we know that it's a trickster, and that's what we know. It wasn't enough. Why do you think they do it? I asked quietly. The victims? I nodded. All I know is what's rumored to be in the evidence files. All the suicides were found with pictures or writings that were considered unspeakable at the time. They contained horrible, evil things that would make you physically sick to read them, they say. And these people, they drew them? They wrote that stuff? Yep. Whatever's in that room drove them mad. That's fucking terrifying. Have you guys considered getting somebody to bless the room? Jesus. Well,
Jesus.
Well, you'll have a hard time getting him, but perhaps some sort of holy person. God, Allison's really out here with the jokes. No, I mean Jesus, we're talking about an exorcism. Al shrugged. Maybe. The rumor in the 70s was that this all started with a Ouija board game gone wrong in 1961. Al shrugged. Maybe. Oh, pff, really? That shit's made by Hasbro. Not in the 60s, it wasn't. Yeah, it was. Anyway, it's just a rumor. The only person on campus who would know is Tom Mullen, an admin. I've tried to talk to him before, but he refuses to see me. Did he go here in 1961? Yes. And he was staying in Riley. Wow. It's like a movie script. We need to talk to him. I need to know what the fuck is happening, or I won't be able to live the rest of my life as a well-adjusted person. I suppose we can try to chase him down on campus. Can we talk to him tomorrow? We can try. Mr. Mullen wouldn't see us that day or the next. We tried to catch him on his lunch hour, and then again while he was leaving work, but he got around us every time. It was soon clear that the old man was actively avoiding us. Lydia and I had seen a little of each other since we continued to sleep in other dorms. I went back to our room twice a day, once in the morning and once in the afternoon. Usually, the room was silent. But that didn't make me feel better. I could always sense something on the other side of the wall, something somehow watching me. It felt like the calm before the storm. The Thursday before Halloween, I came back to the dorm to shower in the evening, much later than usual. I'd seen Lydia that afternoon, and she informed me that she had enough clothes stored at Mike's to last until graduation, so I knew I'd be there alone. I showered down the hall in the safety of the bathrooms, and then went back to my dorm room to change. I was supposed to meet Ian in a half an hour to head out to a party. I wanted to get out of here as quickly as possible. Since the silence was unnerving me, I threw my iPod on the docking station and turned up AC/DC. Highway to hell. Okay. I got dressed and then stood in front of the mirror to dry my hair. I flipped my head over and blow-dried upside down to try and give my hair some volume. When I flipped my head back up and shut off the hair dryer, I immediately noticed the silence in the room. But that wasn't all I noticed. Boom, boom, boom. I wasn't in my dorm room anymore. Behind me was reflected the dusty bed frames of the large open window at room 733. I spun around in a panic to find that I was actually standing in my own room. I looked back at the mirror to see that 733 still reflected there. A slight movement behind me was all it took to make me run. I grabbed my purse and my phone and I fled from our room, slamming the door behind me. On the elevator ride down, I called Alice. I can't do it anymore, I said when she picked up. I can't go back to that room again. I can never go back. What happened? I told her. Jesus, what do you want to do? She asked. I need to talk to someone who knows. What the fuck is going on? Is Tom Owen the only person who knows who... We know who was here in 1961. The only one I know of. Maybe we can get him on his way in tomorrow morning. We'll just have to corner him and refuse to move until he tells us something. He comes in 6:30 according to the schedule I have. Do you want To meet me outside the Starbucks at the atrium? Fuck yeah, I do. I have class at 7:30, but I'll blow it off. Okay, see you there. I wasn't usually much for parties, but I was glad I was going to one that night. As soon as we got there, I asked Ian to get me a drink. Since I wasn't usually much of a drinker, he gave me a raised eyebrow. I gave him a brief synopsis of what had happened earlier, hoping he wouldn't think I was crazy. Ian made me a scotch and coke. It was the first of many. Around midnight, I went to get a cigarette to have a cigarette and check my phone. This must be the 90s. I had a voicemail from Lydia left at 11:04 p.m. Hey, Becca. Listen, I just had a huge fucking fight with Mike. I guess his frat decided that for Halloween this year, all the new brothers had to spend the night in the suicide room in our dorm. I just can't fucking take it. He knows what I've been going through with us, and he still agreed to do this. He's now trying to convince me that Sigma Chi is behind all the stuff going on in the room 733, because they've been trying to drum up buzz for their Halloween deal. I can't. I hit end and threw my phone in my bag. I wondered. No wonder Lydia was pissed. This was not good. Not good at all. I found Ian inside and asked him to take me home. I was suddenly very stressed, very tired, and very drunk. That's me on a daily. When the alarm went off at 6 a.m., I took everything I had to pull myself out of bed. I got dressed in the clothes I'd worn the night before and shuffled my way across campus to the atrium. Alice was already there with black coffee in hand. I figured you'd need this, she laughed. How'd you know? Your text. I texted you last night? Yeah, about 1. You told me about Sigma Chi. Oh, good. Oh, God, yeah. I pushed my sunglasses higher up my nose and pulled my hoodie lower over my eyes. Those guys are idiots. Remember, I told you that that's crafty. Well, what if the point of messing with you was to make 733 provocative, you know, to seduce people into going inside? No one has been in that room for years. Can you imagine how hungry that thing is? Sounds like the Oculus movie. Do you think they're really at risk? I asked as I sat down on the steps of the admin building. Yeah. In fact, the only thing that they have going for them is that all those suicide victims were alone at the time of their death. So it'll be less powerful with all of them there. Theoretically, we would know a lot more if we knew what it was, and we can't know what it is without knowing how it got there, and that's why we need Moen. What time is he supposed to get here? 20 minutes ago, Ox said grimly. It was another half an hour before we resigned ourselves to the fact that Mr. Moen had snuck around us as usual. We went to the front office, hoping to beg again for the appointment with him anyway. The woman at the admin desk regarded us coldly. Tom isn't coming in today, or any other day for the matter. He quit yesterday. Looks like you've been harassing him, and looks like you won't be harassing him anymore. We weren't harassing him, I said. We just desperately need to talk to him. We still do, added Alice. Well, you won't get any of his personal information from me, she said snidely and walked away. What the fuck do we do now? I asked Alice. Without Tom Moen, there's nothing left to do. Alice, fuck. I can't go back to that room. Well, then I guess it's good your transfer came through. They did? Yep. I got the notice when I checked my work email this morning. You're going to Morton and Lydia is going to Tinsley. Oh, thank God. I thought you'd be happy about that. I also convinced my boss not to assign anyone else to room 734. Thank fuck. The only thing is you won't be able to move in until Monday. I can last through the weekend, especially now that the end is in sight. I have to tell Lydia. I opened my phone and pulled out Lydia's number, but my attention was caught by the red 1 badge over the voicemail logo. I hit play. It was the rest of the message from last night. Even look at his dumb fucking face anymore, so I'm going to head home. Don't worry about me. I'll be okay. I'm drunk enough to sleep through any bullshit from next door. I'm so fucking pissed off right now. I would honestly rather deal with dumb shit Beth than Michael. My parents must be siblings because I'm that fucking retarded Benson. Let's hang out tomorrow. Love ya. The message ended. God damn it. Alice gave me a questioning look. Lydia spent the night in our dorm. Alice cringed. She's safe though, right? As long as she doesn't go into 733. She won't. I thought of the always open large window at the corner of the room. If nothing else, the mere thought of those would keep Lydia the hell out of that room. Good. Well, since we have nothing else to do, do you want to go look for theology books in the library? It's pretty much the only thing open right now. Why wouldn't you go check on Lydia? I don't know. She's bad. This is terrible. Sure. I shrugged. I didn't have any other class until 10. The little old lady who sat behind the library checkout desk must have been 1,000 years old. Miss Stapley's eyes were small and watery, and her skin looked like it was melting off her skull. Still, she was nice and knowledgeable, and she sent us in the right direction for books on demonology, though she gave us curious looks as she did. There wasn't much. We read everything we could, but it either wasn't relevant or wasn't in English, and we turned to her desk 30 minutes later. Do you have anything on the occult? The occult? Ah, yes I do. Over there, there to the left of the reference section. Oh, thanks, sorry, I'm too hungover to use the Dewey Decimal System, I said. 18-year-olds, am I right? I don't think she likes the look of us, Alice whispered as she walked away. Or our look or our subject matter. Probably neither. Within the hour, maybe the librarian knows what happened on campus, you know? You know what I mean? Whatever, it's fine. Within the hour, we were back at her desk, having struck out again. We could tell she was getting annoyed as her eyes narrowed suspiciously at us as we approached. Sorry, do you know where we could find something on seances or Ouija boards or... Now listen, girls. Miss Stapley stood up from her desk and looked over her glass at us. I really hope this is for class. It is, I said. It's not. Alice answered simultaneously. It's personal research. Research? What kind of research? Look, we're not going to mess with a Ouija board or anything, I said. Good, Miss Stapley smoothed her pleated pants and sat back down. Because I can't have that sort of thing going on here again.
Again?
Alice latched on. The older woman suddenly looked very uncomfortable and started fidgeting with the stack of books on her desk. We may have something on seances and, Miss Stapley, we're researching what happened in Riley in 1961, Alice interrupted. And also, what's been happening there ever since. Well, it's no secret, is it? A student committed suicide in that room. Dreadful, but not unheard of on a university campus.
That's the truth, though. Maybe someone should fix that.
Five students, I corrected her. But you know that, right? Alice was suddenly talking very fast, because you sound like you're well-versed in this story. Please, tell us how this started, and we might be able to end it. End it, Miss Stapley's voice became quieter, but more concentrated. Don't be so arrogant, young lady. You can't end it. People have always died in that room, and they always will. There is no end to it, so you'd best stay away, far away from it. But maybe, if we knew how this all started, it started just as you think it did. But everyone that was involved is either very old or very dead by now. Just stay away from that room. Concentrate on your studies. I leaned over my desk. Well, I'd love to, but they assigned my friend and me that room next door, and maybe you can forget all about the suicides, but we can't. It won't fucking let us. Yeah, okay. Young lady, I never forget. Miss Stapley's voice was even quieter now. My friend Ellen was the very first to be killed in that room. She was my very best friend, and not a night goes by that I don't imagine her wiggling out that tiny window, standing upon the cold ledge in her bare feet and jumping off the seventh floor of the building. Alice sighed. I'm really sorry. I didn't know. Yes. Well, there are old wounds, my dear. Now, girls, I suggest you request a room reassignment immediately. No one should be living on the seventh floor of that building, and that's all I'm going to tell you about it. Alice sighed, but resigned herself to a nod and wouldn't lean. Oh my god, we wouldn't learn anything more that here. Still, it was quite a breakthrough. At least we had some information now. Alice walked away, and I made to follow her, but my feet wouldn't move. Something was bothering me. A small yet potent word had been buried in Miss Stapley's story. A word that suddenly seemed very important. Hey,
hey, Miss Stapley, I asked the tired old woman at the desk.
Why did you refer to the window in 733? Tiny? Because I've seen those windows, and they're huge, like 5 feet tall. Dear, you're thinking of the corner room. That's the supply closet. Room 733 is the next door to that.
No.
I said, that's room 734. Yes, well, it's now. But they... Oh, no. But they built the additional rooms on to the south hall. They moved all the room numbers down. Oh, my God. I suddenly felt very hot and very dizzy.
That sneaky fucker, Alice whispered next to me, her skin paling.
Lydia. We took off across the campus at a dead run, witnessed only by a few blurry-eyed students on their way to morning classes. When Riley finally came into view, I stumbled on the pavement as my blood turned to ice. From our vantage point, we could clearly see the windows of the corner room were closed, the first and only time I had seen it that way, and the windows to my room was open. I ran into the lobby, pushed past several latte-sipping, UGG boot-wearing freshmen who had just gotten off the elevator. I hit 7 and watched the doors close more slowly than they had ever before. I leaned against the wall and tried to steady my breathing. Alice, how the fuck did this happen?
I don't know. I don't fucking know. She's been there all night, Alice, in our room, alone.
Alice shook her head, but had nothing to say. When the door finally opened on floor 7, we saw a quiet, deserted hallway. I ran towards my room with Alice right behind me. Rounding the corner, I threw open my door, hoping it wasn't locked. It wasn't. Lydia looked back to me, and for one breathless moment, cruel glimmer of hope crossed over her tear-streaked face. But it was too late. The next second, she leaned forward so slightly that she was gone. She screamed the entire way down. Alice ran to the ledge where Lydia had just been while I stood motionless. She stuck her head out the window and looked down just as a different kind of screaming started from the bottom floor. Alice closed her hand over her mouth and pulled her head back into the room as tears of shock ran down her ghost-white face. The screaming from outside got louder as more people saw what remained of my best friend on the cold pavement. I leaned back against the dresser and slumped to the door. A falling death. Lydia never wanted a falling death. I absently picked up one of the pictures that she had strewn all over the floor. It was a picture of Lydia's mother. She was dead. I picked up another picture. It was Lydia's baby sister. She was dead, too. There are dozens of pictures just like it all over the floor. Lydia had been busy all last night. As for the things depicted on them, I cannot tell you. Lydia was a talented artist, and I only saw a few before I got sick on the floor next to me. Alice was standing in the doorway, yelling something down the hall. I don't know what she was saying because all I could hear was a high-pitched whine in the room, and suddenly a piece of paper slid out from under the crack. The closet door glided across the floor towards me. I picked it up and studied it for a moment. This was drawn by Lydia, too, but it wasn't like the others. It was a picture of the closet from my exact vantage point. In the drawing, the door was cracked open, and there was something looking back from the darkness. I put the paper down, studied the closet, and the door was cracked open, just like the picture. I squinted my eyes and tried to see inside. Just as I started to distinguish the defined lines of a long face looking back at me, Alex pulled me to my feet. "We need to get out of here," I thought I heard her say. I never went back into that room. My parents moved my things, and I spent the rest of the semester in my apartment off campus. I transferred to an out-of-state school for my spring semester and finished my degree there. Every night, I dream of Lydia pulling herself through that tiny window, shimming out into the cold ledge, standing up and knowing that there's nothing between her body and the terrifying abyss in front of her. I watched her look down 7 stories to the black pavement below. I realize, though not accept, her terrible fate. I see the blind horror across her familiar features. I hear her wildly pounding heart, desperately trying to race, though every beat of the life she should have lived, and knowing it was only mere seconds. I watched her look back at me, and I watched her fall. It's been 9 years since that night, and every fall semester for 9 years I've called resident services to see which dorms are open for new student assignment. Riley's always open. The 7th floor is closed. This year, life and work got in the way, and I called much later than usual. I was put on hold immediately. "Resident services?" a man finally spoke. "Were you the one asking about open rooms in Riley?" "Yes, that's me." "We're entirely filled up, and there's a waiting list for Riley. But as it happens, you actually have great timing. I make no promise, but we may be able to get you in. Just approved this morning." "Approved for what?" "We're opening the 7th floor." The end. All right. Well, that was truly depressing. But hey, with the coronavirus and everyone being sent home, no one's on the 7th floor because no one's in dorms. And that is a positive outcome. Okay, so like I promised, I will be saying a couple of things that you should maybe read or watch or, I don't know, enjoy during this quarantine time when you are staying safe and staying inside. Currently, I'm watching Criminal Minds. There are like 15 seasons of that, so that will really help you pass the time. I'm assuming if you listen to this podcast, you probably like Criminal Minds. Highly recommend. Keep on watching. Here's an A24 film you can watch. The Disappearance of Sydney. Wow, I don't know. I just watched it. Disappearance. I think it's Sydney Hall. Yeah. The Disappearance of Sydney Hall. It's starring Logan Lerman, the dad from Super 8, Elle Fanning. So, those are some positive things. It's a very good movie. It's also very depressing, but it's A24, so I don't know what you could expect from that one? Maybe watch a little bit of Megamind. That's good. I've been reading a book called Shrill. It's a memoir. I recommend that. It is very short. It's a 5-hour long audiobook, so you can really get through it pretty quickly if you have nothing else to do with your time. They have a TV show based off of it, but the audiobook is worth a listen. You can find that for free. If you have a library card, it's on the Overdrive app. To everyone who is working retail, who is going into work, I wish you the best of luck. You truly are doing an amazing job, and I know that's really tough, and I know that you really need the money, so I commend you for that. For those of you who lost your jobs because of this, we're all in the same boat, guys. There's nothing we can do but try not to stress too bad about it, I guess, because everyone's losing their job. And for those of you that are working from home, just know that you got off really easy on this, and I know that it's tough to work from home, and I'm not saying anything negative about that, but some of us didn't have that option, and we've lost all our income. So maybe next time you see someone who lost their job instead of had to work remotely, just give them a nice 6 feet apart hug and tell them they're doing their best, and if they need to talk about it or if they need anything, you're there for them. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of Screen the Crime. Next week, Tess might be back, unless she's still socially distancing. Don't kill anyone. Stay safe, stay healthy, and wash your hands. Thank you for listening.